Everybody wake up.
Time to wake up. Time to start the day. Wake up late with Dougie. He is the only
wake
way.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Everybody.
Wake up late.
Wake up.
It's late. Time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie. Wake up late with Dougie.
It's time to wake up.
Wake up late with Dougie. What rhymes with Dougie? He's just so funny.
It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Live from Danger Studios. Kuro's praising, now you know.
We're the hottest show in this place.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
Wake up late.
Now everybody.
I said 1, 2, 3.
Everybody wake up.
Live from Danger Studios in Coral Springs, Florida. It's the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Starring Dougie Almeida. Now, let's start the show.
And welcome to the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. I'm Dougie Almeida. And here in Danger Studios in Coral Springs, Florida, on an early morning. It's actually waking up somewhat early today at 11 a.m., 11:20, 11:25. Special guest in the studio, Mark Price, is in the studio, who will be our headliner tonight, Wise Guys Comedy Show. Some tickets remain. Go to make sure we'll give you guys a number to go to that. And comedian Viet Nguyen is here, who's been touring with you all over Florida and all over the place, right?
Fantastic talent. Great guy.
Let me get your mic closed, idiot. So
fantastic talent.
There you go. Thank you, sir.
Great guy.
Good guy. And you've been here before. You've been in the studio before. Didn't you do the podcast once
before? I did not. I did do the show, like, actually last year. I started seeing stuff, like the promo for last year, like on my Facebook memories.
Right. So. You know, isn't that funny? Like, we don't need, I guess you could say we don't need I'm not worried. Like, my mother had Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
I'm not really worried since there's so many Facebook memories that help me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? I can just suffer from it.
I don't know if you
it.
Want to count on the Facebook for your memories, because I'm afraid it's something will change and they'll disappear or the pictures won't
right.
be there or something.
I mean, you know.
I've had people, they've lost their account. They go, oh, my God, all my pictures are gone. I counted on Facebook
right?
to save my pictures.
Well, you know, I still use Snapfish. Like, when I'll save photos on my computer, and so it doesn't get all blocked up. I have Snapfish, where I have albums, you know, like from the shows, from on the road, my dogs, whatever. And I save them all just in case that happens. What happens if Facebook says, we're not going to save all your photos anymore?
Is that a dating site? Too many
Snapfish?
Wasn't there plenty of fish? Okay.
Yeah. I'm a married man, dude.
Okay,
don't get me in trouble.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm on dating sites and shit. What do I know?
Snapfish.
I don't know anything about Adult Friend Finder.
Fin left, you know, fin right.
I don't know anything about MILFs.com.
Yeah.
anyway, welcome. Welcome. You've been to Florida.
We love Florida. It's New Jersey with humidity.
Yeah.
I feel right at home here.
You're really going to compare Florida to New Jersey?
It's a lot of people from my old town. They're here.
All right. So
and
the people,
Long Island,
but not the scenery.
Okay,
not the scenery.
No, the scenery is different. No, it's the people. It's different scenery. It's beautiful here. And everybody from Cleveland should move here right away.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. LeBron tried. It didn't work out for him.
Yeah. So. See how well that went for LeBron. Exactly.
Yeah. I was at the Cleveland Comedy Festival years ago. And that was what I opened up with. I'm like, boy, I can't understand why LeBron left this place. You know, I mean, the scenery, the women are, you know. And then the worst part was I made it to the semifinals. And the guy
couldn't do that bit anymore.
Well, no. Well, the guy who announced me, the MC, what a prick. You know, what he does is, let's hear it for this guy. He's from Miami. We all know how we feel about Miami.
Like,
I'm like, what a fucking idiot. Why don't you say it was my fault the Holocaust started?
Yeah, seriously.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, geez, God. Anyway, well, how's it going? How's the tour going? You've been all over.
We love it. When did we start? A few weeks back?
About 2 weeks ago.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where have you been?
Started in Tampa, Naples, Fort Myers.
Right.
We did a bunch of gigs around Naples and Fort Myers, and then we came to Fort Pierce.
Right.
And now we're here.
Did you do the Sunrise Theater?
Yeah.
That's always a great room.
Casey and Peruski. Spaz.
Yeah.
They opened up the show, Casey and Spaz. You know, that team, I mean, I'm going to give those guys credit, because that little act they do at the beginning has come a long way.
Yeah.
In the beginning, as a comic, you'd be like, oh, my God, what are they doing, you know?
But now they actually
it's,
have
it's
an
funny,
act.
Yeah. Yeah. It's turned into, like, it's Adam and Costello, or, you know, whatever.
New wave, new school. They just sent some pictures, actually, of the show, and it looks really good.
So. Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It's a great room. I've never had a bad show there, because the great thing about Sunrise Theater, the Comedy Corner, and Casey and Spaz Comedy is that those people in that town are, like, looking forward to that night. You know what I mean? It's not like you got a lot of shit to do in Fort Pierce besides scale fish and go bowling and go to the swap shop. You know, there's not a lot of things you could do in Fort Pierce But, you know, the comedy corner, that's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the crowd are great. The crowd's great.
You know, I've done it. I've actually done it for years.
Right.
And it's next. It's right adjacent, for the people watching that don't know, to the most beautiful theater that's been there forever. Yeah. That's gorgeous. And then we're like in the little black box. We're like in the closet. It's basically the hallway. It's a part of the lobby that they blocked off at some point.
Yeah. It used to be a dressing room.
It's
I think.
A punishment den.
Yeah. He's like, go to the Black Box Theater for a little while until you know how to act.
I feel like I'm sitting at the kids' table at Thanksgiving or something by playing there. It's like,
but it's great. It seats 200 people. It's got a big stage.
It's a good venue. A lot of big, beautiful theaters have their little smaller, intimate venue, which is great for comedy, no doubt.
Yeah, one time we were there, I was there with Joey Medina, and a good friend of mine, and we were there, and Jay Leno was there. He was performing in the big theater, and he came down and said, hey, how you guys doing? You know, we got to hang out, and that's pretty cool.
Well, that's it. If you want to play the big theater, you got to sell tickets like Jay Leno. That's just the bottom line.
You know, it is. And you know what? This comedy thing, it's been crazy. You know, I book shows, and I had one room with the Goldfinger, which I stopped. You know, it's kind of hard to run a comedy show at a strip club, even though it's separate of the strip club. And I won't do that anymore. next time a guy with a strip club says, you want to do a comedy show? I'm like, here, I'm going to give you this guy's name.
Jay Leno.
Yeah, he does.
Jay used to do that.
Yeah.
That's how he started, right?
Yeah?
Yeah, He used to do strip clubs, yeah.
Oh, really?
A lot of comics, right?
I guess in those days, they didn't have comedy clubs yet. Where did you play?
Right, yeah. So it was like a burlesque type thing,
any stage time you could get.
But it's challenging. You know, with Netflix and all the shit and people on Facebook, you know, the last post for tonight's show, I said, hey, this may be a good time to get off the computer and walk away from the TV and go see a live comedy show.
But get on Facebook Live and watch this.
Yeah. don't go anywhere now. Watch us on Facebook Live.
Well, it used to be everybody would be famous for 15 minutes. That was the famous quote, right? And I'm clearly in my 16th minute. And but now the new quote is everyone will be famous for 15 people.
Hmm.
How many people do we have right now?
We're up to six.
Ooh.
we're below 15 people. I used to be on network television. What happened?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
50 million people watching. Now we've got six.
Let's talk about it. Great show, Family Ties with Michael J. Fox. Well, I love Michael J. Fox. My father suffered from Parkinson's, so I actually reached out to him, never heard back, and I don't know if even my contact information I got, because I would love to do stuff for charity for Parkinson's.
Well, we're raising money this tour. Yeah, we're in the process of raising $10,000. We did it before. We're doing it again this year.
Well, great. I mean, that's something I would love to be, because my dad suffered.
You're a part of it. You are a part of it. Tonight, after the show, we've made T-shirts that actually have the name of the restaurant and the poster and everything. And 100% of the profits goes to the Michael J. Fox Foundation.
Well, that's fantastic. It's a debilitating disease, and, you know, my father was always a strong guy. And, you know, I was telling somebody just this morning, because they were asking stuff, and I'm like, I was supposed to go to NYU Law School. I got accepted there to go there after college, and my father became disabled from his disability from back surgery and everything, and he developed Parkinson's. And it's just crazy to watch the deterioration of somebody debilitating disease. It's just amazing. So, you know, like my mother had Alzheimer's. My father had Parkinson's, so it's only a matter of time before I forget when I started shaking.
Hey, you know good morning. Saying? Good morning.
Now, here's the thing about that. I'm just going to talk about disease, and this is sometimes in life. My father, it's very hard to deal with it. He was a strong guy and stuff. Now, he didn't want to be around people because of it, and he felt embarrassed. And it's a tough, right? But there was one moment where my father finally found some way to cope, like a coping mechanism, because he was always a funny guy. That's where I started doing comedy, because my dad. But, you know, he was that way. Simpático, we say in Spanish. He was very sympathetic. But my father one day is drinking. I go, Dad, what are you drinking? He goes, a milkshake. You know what I mean? He's like found humor, and you know what I mean? He's like dealing with it, right?
Right.
And now I had one of my comedy mentors say, you know, you got to talk more about that part of your life, because, you know, it's a struggle. It's a pain. It's something you went through. You know what I mean? So I've been writing jokes about it, and it's kind of been a weird.
It's hard.
It's a hard thing to, you know. It's like you can't joke about cancer. You know what I mean? It's hard to, you know, come up with these types of things.
It's not a good comedy subject matter. However, we've learned through history that some comedians can tackle any subject matter and make it funny.
Yeah, but, that's true. And that's a real true. Now, how old were you when you started? How old were you when you started?
I can't make that stuff funny. I can't even listen to about it. I can't even hear details. People tell me details about stuff that's procedures in the hospitals. I got to go. I'm sorry. I care. I can't. I just can't.
You don't like, like that it. Aspect of it.
I can't take it. I'm too sensitive.
How do you feel when you like go on Facebook and somebody shows like an animal cruelty thing or something?
I don't like that either.
Yeah, that makes me. I'm like, sensitive. Why are you posting this? You know, I get mad when I see that. You know,
but on the other hand, you understand that if they don't post it, nobody's going to know about it, and nobody will care. But yeah, but I don't want to say, oh god damn right.
Now, Family Ties. Was this your first TV break? Was this the first thing, or did you have other projects prior to that that were
As a 13-year-old, I'm proud to say I had other projects.
Yeah.
But nothing as big as Family Ties. That was the big one. But I was on One Day at a Time and Archie Bunker's Place before Family Ties. And then I was on Family Ties once. And I was on Merv Griffin as a comedian before all that.
Really? How old were you then?
I was 14.
Really?
That's what led to Family Ties.
Wow. Did Merv hit on you?
No, he did not. He gave me my break like he did so many people in show business that credit him for giving them their start. A lot of comedians. And
yeah.
Stuff. Really.
I mean, Merv Griffin, Mike Douglas. Those are two talk shows that were back in the day, like, you know. Well, that's awesome. So you're on the show. You know, that was a big TV show. That show ran for how long?
7 years.
Wow.
It was, from when I was 14 to when I was 21.
Wow. Now, does that show still air? I mean, imagine airs in certain places.
You have an antenna and some tinfoil. No, there's actually a network called Antenna TV that plays it. Really?
Is it?
I swear. But really? You can get it on cable, too, I think, on certain channels and stuff.
Like TV One or something like Nick at Night,
it's
maybe?
It's so splintered now. There's so many options that even if somebody finds it, it just can't mean as much as it did back in the day when there was, you know, Fox didn't even exist yet.
Right, right.
It was just there were three networks and everybody was focused on the hit shows.
Now, you and I are about, I think you and I are about 12, 13 months apart. Your birthday's in February.
That's right.
Coming up this month.
Yeah.
And I turned 50 in April last year.
Oh, wow.
So you're about to, right? I think. Yeah, I don't want to give you all your age.
No, I don't mind. I'm 50. I've grown to cope.
It's not a bad thing. You know, 50 is the new, you know, like 30.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. You're a young guy.
I'm 35.
Yeah.
I'm 26 on MySpace.
You know, when my wife dyes my hair, I go down to 38.
So there you go.
You know what I'm saying? People say that to me, especially in the last couple of weeks. I mentioned on stage I'm 50. I do a bit about getting older, right? And people are like, yo, after the show, like, wow, you look great for 50. I'm like, well, I don't have any kids. You know, I never had any kids.
That's why I still have all my hair.
Right? You don't have any children?
No children.
You're not married?
I've never been married.
Never been married?
That's why it's not gray yet.
You're
married,
aren't you?
I have a girlfriend now, and my hair is getting grayer faster.
Oh, yeah?
Day.
I'm telling you, man. Those those women age us. Now, you're married.
Yeah, I'm married.
By the way, I love
how
you.
How long have you been married?
I love you, Angela.
3 years.
3 years. It's not going to work. But besides that, do you have any kids?
Huh? No kids.
All right. You're going to have kids?
Probably not. Maybe.
No?
I don't know. We don't know yet.
Yeah?
She's going through her residency.
You're using
right
birth
now.
Control, are you? Or, you know?
Yeah.
Or are you just going, whatever happens, happens?
No, man. She's on birth control.
I got you. She's on the pill?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I guess I probably shouldn't be saying, but she's on the IU.
Well, oh, yeah. It's probably too much information. She's a medical professional, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
His lady is training to be a surgeon.
Yeah, she's nice. In her residency for surgery.
Oh, good. That's nice. That's good.
Which means she lives in the hospital. That's why they call it a residency.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Literally, that's why they call it that. I thought I was kidding, but that's actually what they call it.
Well, no, I don't know, but she's there a lot.
She's there all the time.
There's a lot of good-looking doctors. You ever worry about, her, you know, getting hooked up with a doctor as opposed to a comedian?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I take care of her.
Yeah, well, that's good. Okay.
I worry about that with my girlfriend.
Yeah. I mean, it was funny because for a while there, I wanted my wife to quit her job as a hairdresser, you know, so she's like, get a job with the airline so I can fly for free, you know?
Right.
And my buddy says, yeah, I wish that too. And I caught my wife banging a pilot. I'm like, all right. maybe I'll have her working in reservations.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, we'll watch, like, I think we watched, like, the first couple episodes of, like, Grey's Anatomy.
Right.
And then so I'm just like, hey, so how accurate is that? And then she's like, it's kind of close. I was like, minus all the hookups?
Yeah.
And then she's like, yeah. Yeah. I was like, okay, thank God.
Yeah, well, and
if Grey's Anatomy's accurate, then I'm a doctor, because that's a nerdy guy. McDreamy, by the way. McDreamy was the nerd in Can't Buy Me Love, the 1980s movie. Does
remember
that?
Yeah, I remember
And
that.
Now he's McDreamy, and I'm McNugget.
All these older ladies liked him and stuff, right? I mean, and wasn't he in a movie about pizza and stuff? Where
I think that's the one with the older ladies.
Okay, like that. Mystic Pizza, or was that something else? I don't know. McDreamy. I don't know. I just don't, you know.
Patrick Dempsey.
I had a friend of mine who's a comic that has an open relationship, you know, with his wife, because he's on the road for like 20 years. So he's like, yeah, man, my wife and I, because like after he's hitting on women after the bar, and I'm like, hey, dude, you know, like I didn't want to involve, you know, like tell anybody how to live, but I was like, hey, you know, just. Is your wife ever, you know, I mean, he's like, I have an open relationship. I'm like, are you just saying that? I mean, I'm not trying to screw the guy, so I don't care. But, you know, it's like, oh, no, we do. I'm like, all right. And I saw a picture of his wife. I go, well, I guess you're on the winning part of this fucking deal. But, you know, like me, I wouldn't do that because my wife's hot. I'm not going to enter in an open relationship. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm the loser. You know what I mean? Meanwhile, you know, I'm like, it's like, okay, it's an open relationship. It's like you go outside, you know, at a Hertz rental car, and you're like, all right, do you want to rent this Toyota Yaris? you know, or you want to take this Escalade,
yeah,
you know, and my wife being the Escalade in that bad analogy. Any rate, so I just don't believe it. Now
we're lucky guys. We all consider our women Escalades.
Yeah, yeah.
But his is going to be a doctor.
Yeah.
Well, that's an Escalade with a premium package.
That's a fancy, yeah, fancy Escalade.
That's, you know, dude, that's, you know.
But mine's a movie star.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Do we know her?
Yeah.
What's her name?
Her name is Angela Jones, and she played in the movie, most famously in Pulp Fiction. She plays Esmeralda, the cab driver that picks up Bruce Willis after the fight.
Oh, okay. Oh, nice.
But she starred in a Quentin Tarantino-produced movie called Curdled.
Hmm.
That's all about crime scene cleanups and stuff, and she's the lead in it, and it's a pretty cool
movie. Now, how long have you been with this young lady?
We've lived together for the last year, and we've been together for a couple of years, but we actually dated many, many moons ago before she was even in those movies and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And we sort of found ourselves moving amicably our own separate ways. We were too young.
Right.
But now we've reunited, and she's the one I let get away.
Oh.
And I got her back.
Oh, really? So you went, yeah, that's interesting that happened.
She's texting me right now.
Yeah? She's like watching, like, don't talk about us. It's funny. Yeah, like my wife and I, my wife and I were together for 12 years before we got married.
She doesn't like it when I say that I found my forever love and we're age appropriate. She doesn't like that people know she's same. You know, she's like, she's a much younger woman, much younger woman.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's the only time they want you to date a younger woman. We're talking about them.
I know my wife's like 2 or 3 years younger than me. How old is your wife? Same age?
She's 4 years.
Yeah, younger.
4 years younger. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good match. Like that's where our parents were, right? Our parents were always like couple years apart, fairly. You know, they a few years, you know,
yeah,
and you know,
was it half your age plus seven? Is that the
is that what that
is? That the formula?
Well, you're an engineer, so you know this shit. I wouldn't.
Some old construction guy told me that.
Yeah,
he was just like, yeah, the appropriate age is half your age plus seven.
And he was bad at math. He was 42, and she was 18.
He was bad at math. That's why I worked at a construction site.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not good with numbers, but my wife, I got to pick her up at high school. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. So getting back to this. So now you're on the show. I mean, I always think about things like that, like. I was an athlete, professional athlete, before I was a comic, right? So you always think about the big, like, I'm going to play in a big soccer arena, you know, and you think about that when it happens, or, you know, as a comic. But as an actor, you get a TV gig, especially at a young age. How does that hit you? Like, you know what I mean? Is it, like, overwhelming? Is it, you know, because a lot of child actors fail. Like, they go, you know.
That is true. A lot of them succeed, and we don't ever hear about it either. So my theory used to be that that statistically, if you just look at, you know, young people in general and how many of them sort of go off the rails, it's probably a similar percentage with kids in the business or out of the business. But I've updated that theory since. I think maybe if you're a kid in show business, it does. Yeah, many of them are screwed.
It's got to be hard because
I was a teenager. I was just a little bit older. I started just enough older. And I was also, I hate to, I don't know if it counts if you say it about yourself, but I was pretty adult.
Right.
Pretty young.
Right.
So I feel like it might be different for somebody else that was really a kid.
You have siblings?
I do. In fact, my sister lives here in Florida.
Got, and she older, younger?
She's older.
Okay.
We were never in the house together and stuff like that, but we're close now. And
nice.
Her kids are my nephews, and they're here in Florida too.
Oh, nice.
So this has been a family.
Like, I had three older brothers, so I've always been a little more mature for my age.
Oh, maybe.
Because I had three older brothers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I had, I was the youngest of four boys. There's certain things I had to do, like lose my virginity at a respectful age.
Which,
you know,
are we allowed to ask how old?
12.
12. That's not a respectful age. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, it was my priest, but never mind. I'm like, it was,
hey-o.
No, you know what I'm saying? It was an 18-year-old lady. It was a funny story. I actually was,
that, by the way, it's the only time you call an 18-year-old lady lady is when you're 12.
I called her a lady. believe me.
She was lady of the evening.
Yeah. Well, for me that night. You know, it's funny. I could still remember it vividly. I actually got into a little fight on the street with an older kid that was like 16, 17. I was 12. And I've always been in martial arts since I was a kid. So I basically beat the shit out of this kid. But I panicked because I hurt him so bad. I started like hyperventilating. And I had asthma as a kid too. So I was like, I started freaking out.
So she came to comfort you.
Yeah, she was my nurse. She was my the Nightingale thing or the whatever. But she took me to my house. Nobody was home. She was put a cold washcloth on my head. I'm laying on the couch. She's like, you're going to be all right. And then he went from stroking my chest. And somehow she kept going lower and lower and... You know, I was a 12-year-old boy. I got a boner right away.
Sounds like a plot for a porn.
Yeah, it was like, I actually put it in forum one time. I put it in.
Has this story been on the podcast before, or is this a first?
I don't know. I may have told it, but, you know, and the next thing you know, she was this, and She started like this, playing with
okay,
it.
Okay, we know what happened. We get it.
Yeah, and then, you know, you don't have to get it to it. Yeah. Then she slowly put her lips on my penis. Yeah, so I was 12. And but it was like, it's weird how you these things happen. You know what I mean? Yeah. How old are you?
Now? No.
No, how old are you? Lost your...
I can't complain. I was 15.
That's good. Pretty, that's a respectful
good.
Number.
Pretty good.
I'm going to guess higher.
Yes.
And it has
is
not,
it, is this a new game show? Higher, yeah, lower?
Yeah, it's like card sharks all of a sudden. No
whammies. No whammies.
And I'm only saying that because of the discipline of the Asian families. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying because of your looks or anything. I'm just saying because I know, you know, how strict,
right.
you know, an Asian family can be.
I mean, it was in high school, so I guess, like, probably, like, 16, 17.
All right. Okay, that's respectful, too. You want to finish high school and still be that guy.
Yeah, what is it? Disrespectful if it's 30?
Oh, yeah.
If you're 26, that's disrespectful.
Either you weren't trying, you know what I mean? Yeah. You were preoccupied with something. You better have been a Nobel Prize winner before you lost your virginity. That's the only excuse you can have.
Or like Amish or something.
Yeah, exactly. your father was a preacher, you know, or something. Who knows? It's interesting when these things happen. So you get, let me ask you this. When you get that show and you're on TV, you know, how was it then? I mean, you had to have been like, you know, just nailing everything on the street.
Oh, I guess it did well for me. I was the nerdy guy, but I can't complain.
Yeah. I mean, that would, you know, could you imagine? Yeah, I'm on that TV. You go to school, you're on that TV show, and all the girls are like, hey. Right. You know.
Well, I didn't go to school, but I wasn't at school. But it was like when I'd go to, especially when I left L.A. or whatever and would go on the road and stuff.
Right.
And I played a lot of colleges.
Nice. Now you were home, like you basically got tutored and stuff because, you know, typical child actor being tutored or?
Exactly. I did it a little differently. We had a tutor on the set.
Right.
And then the tutor and the people from the producers and the show and everything thought I was going to actual school.
Right.
And then actual school thought I was just being full-time tutored on the set.
I guess this explains why you're a comic now.
That's how
I'm like an engineer like this guy.
And that's why I'm doing your gig tonight.
Exactly. You're doing a pizza shop in the back room.
But what's your excuse? Says. You're an engineer.
Huh? I didn't do comedy till like I've only been doing comedy since like for 10 years.
But how did you engineer that, getting out of the engineering business and into comedy?
Just because I mean, I've been doing it on the side and, you know, like part time.
Right.
And it was getting to a point where I was using more. I used all my vacation time for gigs, like doing that kind of stuff.
And then, working that out.
Yeah. And then, you know, I met my wife who's going to be a surgeon. So so when it was time for me to move down from Atlanta over to Gainesville where she is, I was like, well. Like, let me just give it a shot.
Why not?
Yeah,
right?
I mean, if anything, I can always get another engineering job.
It's a good thing you can fall back on that. It's not like you have an Amway business.
Right.
You know,
direct
marketing Nu Skin or something where you lose all your clients.
Yeah, it's like when I talk to headliners and we're just like, yeah, I still got my house in Kennesaw. Like, you're a feature and you're a homeowner?
Yeah, exactly.
Just like,
It's funny. People come to this place and they're like, you know, wow, you got this from comedy? I'm like, yeah, this is all feature money, this house.
Yeah.
On the road.
I actually said that as we pulled
in. We knew something was up. We were like, this comedy didn't buy this house. Yeah. He has another job. He's a money manager or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's convenient. Like, you know, people, like, I'm blessed in the sense that because comics, that one of a few things will happen, right? You don't have any money. You're out of young comics.
Right.
I work with James Camacho, a really funny guy in New York.
Yep.
He's at that point where he's like, I'm trying to do it. I'm pushing because this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But he has the income is tough. So, you know, you worry about how much you're getting paid or you're concerned about that and stuff. You know, when I started doing comedy, I didn't really care about the money. I just care about stage time. You know what I mean? I had money.
Right.
I just wanted to get on as many stages as possible. It's like when the New York Comedy Club was my home club in Boca, I didn't care that they weren't paying me. There was people that were saying, I'm not going to work for them. They don't pay you to host. I'm like, what are they going to do? Pay you $25 and give you a hot dog? You know, I'm worth that 15 minutes on stage that night is worth more to me than, you know what I'm saying? So I didn't care. I wasn't feel like I was being taken advantage of, even though they may have. But I still looked at it as a value to me, right?
Right.
Even to this day, as I tour around, it's like, as long as I'm not spending money, you know what I mean? As long as I make my own money. But thank goodness, you know, this past year was the first year I think I netted like $40,000, you know, doing comedy. So that's not, you know.
Yeah.
I pissed off my wife because I reminded her today that my part-time job as a comic, you know,
doubled more
than her hairdresser income. But, you know, that's why she's in the room locked up right now. I'm not talking to me. So Any residuals from the acting? Does stuff still come in from that stuff? Or is it?
It's in the $4 thing range now. So it's not the big stacks of money. But I am always appreciative. I mean, what other gig sends you even $4 from, 30 years ago? I mean, come on.
Someone just told me about this new thing where it's like a patron thing where you can sign up on a website.
Yeah, Patreon.
Patreon, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to work on that this weekend.
Yeah.
Where you just go on there and people donate. To your cause. Like you say, look, I'm an actor, I'm a comedian, I have a podcast, this and that. If you guys would love to support me.
I don't like that idea, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't like it because there's like real charities and people in more in need than we are that need that money. Why should we be asking
Screw
for
the
donation?
SEALs, dude. Fuck the SEALs. I don't give a shit about the SEALs. Listen, no.
SEALs. There's people.
I hear what you're saying, but you know what? Like this podcast has a patron page. I don't really bother.
Well, that's okay. That's all right. But I mean, I don't know. Something about, I don't know. A GoFundMe for anything less than something that's worthy of funding.
It does seem like, help me. It seems like welfare-ish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I need some handouts.
But I mean, like...
Indiegogo, to some degree, are that.
Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, at the same time, it's sort of like a direct way of like, saying like...
Panhandling.
It is. But I mean, it's like, you still... it's for the people that say, like... Oh, like the only way you can get this content is if you contribute to this. That's what bothers me. It's
right.
Like we're just like, hey, we have it here for free, but if you want to give us a couple bucks, if you feel like it,
that's
then
cool.
Great.
Well, that's what I would try. Yeah. That's the thing I was trying to work in my outline for that Patreon thing. Yeah. I was trying to say, look, I'm a comic.
Yeah.
I love entertaining people. I make a little money at it. But, if there's any way, if you like what I'm doing and stuff like that, $1, you want to donate $1 a month.
Mm-hmm.
By all means, donate,
Yeah, like.
But don't take that dollar out of Cancer Society. Don't take that away from the Parkinson's Foundation. Don't take it away from people that really need it, right?
You heard it here.
I'm telling you, man. I love that. You donate to charities?
Hmm?
We work for them and you help them and stuff. But
we help out. I mean, I don't know. I do when I can.
There was a talk show host. I think his name was Stanley Siegel. He was a West Coast guy. Maybe I don't remember exactly if anybody remembers this guy. But I was on a show once. This is so many years ago. And he said to me, "So, Mark, do you read books?"
Yeah.
And he said it just like that. Yeah. But I didn't know what to answer.
Books?
I read books about stand-up comedy and television.
I donate to, homeless shelters and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right, you do. Yeah. He makes little kits up and distributes them.
Very good.
We were talking about it. If anyone's going to do that, in addition to food or whatever you would want to donate, toiletries, it seems, are really important for people who are living on the street.
That's
they need
true.
A toothbrush.
Yeah, I mean, like,
they need toothpaste. They need
we're on the
floss.
Road so much.
Little soap.
And then, we always see the guy with the sign.
Sure.
On the interstate. So
I just go to the packet put together. Nice.
I just go to the dollar store, fill up a couple bottles of water, maybe some granola bars,
right?
And a toothbrush or
something
like that.
Absolutely.
And
makes
I just
sense.
Hand them one of those and just be off on my way.
Yeah, I forgot my toothpaste on my last gig this past week in Newport News. I woke up. Fuck! I forgot my toothpaste.
Oh yeah, you went to Cozzy's, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
We love
Cozzy's. It's a fun room.
We love Cozzy's.
It's a fun room. We had a It's always good when the people say, "Boy, the last few weeks we only had 15 people in the audience, but somehow you drew 45, 50 people here tonight." I'm like,
nice.
It just probably there was nothing else in town that week, but that's cool as shit. Now let me ask you a question.
Lorraine.
And this was brought up today with our good friend Eddie Brill. He made a comment to me regarding to politics, but the rich keep getting richer and the poor keep getting poorer.
Where did he tell you to shove it?
No, he didn't tell me. He's he's a nice guy. He respects me in a sense and knows that I probably have him killed if he. Anyway, I have those kind of connections. But, the rich keep getting rich, the poor keep getting poorer. And, my question is when I hear something like that, is one success to be predicated on government or one the individual themselves? I came from a have-not family. My parents didn't have any money. I went to college on a soccer scholarship. I knew my parents were going to be able to afford me college. So I knew I had to bust my ass at something. I wasn't smart. My parents couldn't help me with geometry. You know what I mean? They didn't have any knowledge of that kind of shit. So, I didn't have any, my brothers were all fuck-ups. It's not like, they paved the way for me. So, I knew what I had to do right at an early age. I did it, and I got scholarships. And from there, I made my way. You know what I mean? So, to me... I feel like we, just like in acting, just like in comedy, it's all based on our decisions, right? The decisions we make and how we deal with those decisions.
It's just harder today because even if you decide to go to college, which, I didn't do, but everybody should, it's expensive. It's so crazy expensive that to pay it back becomes a burden before you even get started. You're already in the hole.
Yeah, I can see that. But, Bernie Sanders talked about getting free college for everybody. You know, I think that would work for the first 2 years. I think that's good. And then you have to move from there.
Well, like, to some degree, and of course, I don't remember because I didn't go to college, but we used to have that. It's like, let's have that again. Did you?
Right.
You got a scholarship.
Right.
Which was great.
And if you're underprivileged, you can get a Pell Grant. You get financial aid.
But did a lot of your college friends end up with just mounds of debt like they have now?
Well, some have. Like, that was part of, like law school. When I had the decision to go to law school, when my father couldn't work and I couldn't really, not only did I wasn't getting any financial backing from them, but I had to now take care of them. So it wasn't a question of my family helped me or not. It's like, I had to help my family. How can I help my family pay bills and go to law school, right? But so I started looking at the loans and what it would be, and I made a decision. I go, this isn't going to work. I have a finance degree, business major, minor in philosophy. I'm just going to take my finance degree and be a financial advisor, right? It's a decision I made. It turned out to be a good decision. Now, I have friends that have went to college for a certain degree, like engineering and shit, yeah. And now they're working at the fucking Walgreens, you know, as a cashier.
Right.
So there's some people that, you know, they're professional students, mm-hmm. and they've milked the system. And they got hundreds of thousands of dollars of college debt, but then they never applied.
And now they're doing Dougie Almeida's gig.
Yeah, now they're
on a Wednesday.
Exactly, they're hosting for me for $25. Yeah. You know, so you know, part of it's like a bit of responsibility, you know, and that kind of thing. But you know, so in other words, do you feel a lot of stuff is based on the individual, or you think that the individual really needs to be supported through the system?
Well, I'll let you answer if you want. I can answer.
I think people that come from nothing and go up, I think that's more of an exception to the rule nowadays.
Yeah.
My dad lived the American dream. He came after the war as a refugee.
Right.
And, you know, I'm Vietnamese, by the way.
Yeah.
And so, he worked his way little power plant jobs and stuff like that. Eventually he got we owned a laundromat. Very Asian, I know.
Oh God!
And then
so stereotypical.
You know, yeah, I know.
But
and then my mom, you know, both my parents. I mean, but luckily, you know, like my grandmother, took care of us while they worked hard.
Right.
You
know, it's good to have a family unit.
Yeah, so I mean,
but your point is, your family was able to squeak ahead.
Yes.
And was able to build so that the next generation is doing better than the last.
Right. Right. I mean, I had a pretty privileged life where
by comparison to theirs.
Exactly. That's a good point. Yeah. By comparison to theirs, in comparison to other people, like people say that to me, like, oh, well, I go, compared to what?
Yeah.
You know, I know countless people that had it much better than I did. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
that's the way it always is. No matter how good you're doing, there's going to be somebody who's doing better.
But see, right.
And no matter how bad you're doing, I may add, there's people who are doing worse and never tempt worse.
And here's the thing. That's why, you know, there's an old saying of poker, play the hand you're dealt. You can't complain, oh, I keep getting shitty cards. Good poker players will play those hands and play. It's a skill. The people, I get aggravated with people like, oh, you know, you got luck. My brothers used to say this, oh, you got luck, you're just lucky. I'm like, no, lucky isn't, like I played soccer in college, right? So we had weeks where we're on the road sometimes. So you had to keep up with studies.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a great student anyway, but I had to bust my ass, stay up at night, take no-dos. You know, that's not lucky. That's dedication. That's kind of shit.
It's a combination of both, I think.
What?
Yeah, like luck and hard work.
I disagree. I think hard work. There's an old saying: fortune favors the prepared mind. You know, you have to be in the situation to be lucky. You know, if you sit back and you don't take chances, you're never gonna. You know, you maybe one person. Oh my God, I won the lottery, right?
Yeah.
But for the most part, if you're out there and you're putting yourself out there and you're doing it, that's where luck.
Right. You can't fight destiny, but you have to steer it. You can't just sit around and wait for it to happen magically.
Exactly. You know what I mean?
Or your destiny might not be
as I kind of feel that way about some of the youth today. Like, everybody's been, like, coddled in the sense, like, oh, you're so special. Things will work out. And that's the problem I had with the last several years. It's like we've become a welfare state. Like, everybody, let's make excuses for everything. Let's, you know, in a sense. And, no, look, let's get up and step up. Your father came to this country for that, because he didn't come here saying, hey, give me everything. He came here saying, I'm going to work hard for it.
Right.
That's an old mentality that this generation doesn't have.
Well, all right. So if we want to get into it a little bit, this generation doesn't have the opportunity that it had to
I don't know why you say it. There's thousands of opportunities,
wait,
of new technology.
Specifically in terms of getting ahead. If you're a worker bee, the idea that you're going to go on to be middle management and go on to become the upper echelon of the company, it doesn't work
that
way anymore, because they've separated it out.
Yeah.
It's just now it's like worker bees and the elite people that run the companies.
Small
and they
business and people aren't like, for example, there's a period in the economy after the 2000 dot-bomb collapses and stuff where big people that work for big corporations fell out of that and they went into their own industry. They went into their own business. So in the early 2000s, you saw an incredible growth of entrepreneurship and things like that and small businesses being grown. So that's where I disagree with that, because that's happened in the last decade. So, you know, I think that as everything expands, you know, now, listen, when it comes to there's certain industry that's been shut down, like people talk about, is the robot going to replace
everything?
You know, everything.
We went to the store before we came here. Yeah. We checked ourselves out at the checkout counter.
But for that,
without a person.
For the cashier who loses their job, there's a technician that gets hired to have to support that. So sometimes that's the thing that we were monitoring right now. Like, will robot.
No. There's not nearly as many technicians to fix those things or deal with those machines as it is the people that used to do the job. I'm not saying it's a mistake to change it over.
Well, technology moves forward. Yeah, I'll go in further. The cashier who lost the job for that is replaced with the technician who watches the machine. The person who creates the machine, the technologist, the person who draws up.
No, but that's not nearly as many jobs. It's less. I mean, that's just the way it is with robots taking over manufacturing jobs and so forth. That's the way it is.
Like my parents, when we bought, they bought their house. It was like a 3-bedroom, like, you know, like a ranch style, like family house. Like their mortgage was $24,000. Right. And then, like, and you know, like, you could actually, like, live a wage, I think, you know, like, with a manufacturing job kind of thing. You can't do that anymore. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and then, like, I mean, my tuition, like, when I went to Clemson, doubled within the 4 years that I was there. You know, like, so, I mean, like, the amount that people are making, you know, like, you couldn't just have, like, a manual labor job. You know, I mean, sure, you know, like, you have to.
The country's out of balance. It's top heavy, and we're missing that middle class.
Yeah.
Well, I agree. I think, yeah, that's been, and I think that's a multifold what's happened with that industry and some of the things you're talking about. But it's also been the people that are saying, I've given up, and I'm not going to take on this challenge because they're believing in that there's not there. Lack of ingenuity and that foresight and that creativity is gone. You know, there's a big part of that in society too, which keeps that from happening. Right. And you know, the rich keep getting richer, the poor keep getting poorer. Well, the problem with that is there's limited commodities, and population grows. So if you add those things together, the limited aspects of these things, population growth, that number, that's only going to happen. The rich are going to get richer and the poor are going to get poorer. If a human being that's in good shape, they get healthier until obviously there's a decline in age, right? Yeah, but the economy is an ongoing thing. It's an ongoing thing that keeps taking. Right. So with it, that's what you're going to have. You're going to have rich people, you know, because that's what happens. Success breeds success. You know, as a comic, I get booked. Okay, that's great. Now other comedy clubs, hey, this guy's getting booked, let's book them.
Right.
So success continues.
Right.
You know, the person who goes and eats a dick on stage, you know, because they didn't write new material, or they didn't take it seriously, they fall. You know what I mean? And that's almost a natural progression too.
Right.
But as population grows, these numbers are going to grow as well. So sometimes when you point certain things out, you know, and listing blame on things, I always go back to the individual. As hard as things are, look, there's excuses, right? You know, I mentored for the Boys Clubs of America for years, a young black men who didn't have parents. And my big thing was always like, look, there's 1,000 reasons to fail. You know, there's 1,000 things you're going to hear going through life of why it's going to be okay if you don't make it, right? But there's only one or two real things that are going to make a difference for your success, and that's how you feel about yourself.
Right.
And what you deserve and what you think you deserve. And that's self-worth, and that's something you got to – and the only way that works is by achievement, right? Confidence. When I was a sophomore in high school, I played in the state finals in soccer for our high school state championships. I was talking about getting pussy. You know, when you're a sophomore in high school and you're the goalkeeper for the state runner-up championship team, it worked. I mean, I wasn't getting family ties pussy, but I was getting, you know, high school. Just thought I'd share that. But you know what I'm saying? So
those words never used before in the same sentence.
Family ties pussy.
That's the first. That's the first, Dougie.
Well, thanks. I like to be original. I try. Michael J. Fox, great guy, right? That's what I always hear. The guy's, you know. Great guy, have you seen him lately? How's he doing and everything?
Yeah, he's doing as well as anybody can under those circumstances. Yeah. I never know how to.
It's such a young age. It's just amazing. You know, like, that's amazing about these things like that happen when you get, you know, when you get hit with that at an early age.
It's sad when anybody has to deal with it. Yeah. But somehow, if you've had a long, exciting life, and then you, at the very end, you have to put up with that for some time. It seems like that's fairer than somebody that gets...
At an early age, absolutely. Another question before we go to some news stories. Facebook, you hate it, love it? How do you guys feel about Facebook?
I'm on it way too much.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, are you getting to the point where it's like,
I've got it right now.
Hold like on. I've this in the last 6 months, I've blocked, unfriended countless people more than I have in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just because enough. I mean, again, politically, ideologically, people have different opinions. I can respect either one because, look, my way isn't the only way. This is the way I view things. Other people say things. I respect that. You know, that's the way they feel.
I don't like where everybody – I'm on it as much as anyone, but I don't like where people are so quick to be mean. And if they and when someone doesn't agree with them, instead of, you know, you could make your point without going, you idiot, apparently you don't read.
Right.
And they, and they say, you know, they,
exactly.
They're so rude about it. It's like nobody would be that rude in a room.
Yeah.
Somehow on the wall of the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, yeah, just like the trolling, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, where it's just like, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea, you know, like for a moron, like, you know, like for a fucking idiot, you know, just like, oh, thanks.
Yeah.
No, or you got a really rude. I know we do have to go soon, but you got a really rude comment on the internet. You want to tell him about that one?
Oh yeah, I mean it was just like, you know, I had you know, like I have a joke about, you know, a race.
All right, I was setting up for a joke. I was setting him up for a joke. Fine, you just busted me.
Yeah, you're setting it up for a joke, but yeah, you know, and then it was a white supremacist that like replied back to me.
Oh really?
I guess because he's like he probably has like some kind of finder word for,
really
for like a. For racist or something.
Oh, really?
Like that. Yeah. And then, you know, like I look, you know, like I look on his profile and it's just like racism is a generated term, you know, like that, like to oppress the white people and stuff like that.
Right.
Like,
well, right.
I was like,
that's crazy.
That wasn't the joke I was setting him up for.
No, I'm not going to tell the joke.
I was going to say, I hope you don't tell that joke tonight.
No.
That one at least.
No.
But you know,
by the way, he doesn't want to tell the joke. He doesn't want to blow out the material for six people.
Exactly. Yeah, the six people that might be coming to the show.
Yeah.
That's true. That is the actual six people that might be coming. Yeah. So you're right.
Well, we got a nice – we're probably over 40, 50 people at least at this point. I know that.
Nice.
Sister come in? She's got her group of friends.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, that's up to the venue. You know what I mean? When they do that and they see it's – you know, that – you know,
hopefully we'll work
out. It will work out one way or the other. And that's up to – that's the venue. Again, I can only book the show. And after a while, I step on their shoe. Look, don't tell me how to run my restaurant. That's what I end up hearing.
Now, speaking of my sister, I'm supposed to go meet her.
Right.
So I think we need to say well, thank you so much.
Well, if you want to end my podcast early.
Isn't it afternoon?
It's no,
afternoon.
Well, we're at 40 minutes into a 60-minute podcast, but that's cool. Let me, real quick, a couple other things I wanted to, if not, we'll see if we figure out a way to do this. What I wanted to say, you're talking about Facebook and unfriending real quick.
Yeah.
I had a comic do that, talk about read a book. Right? The person attacked me.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, because of whatever's being said. And he goes, why don't you read a book? I go, read a book?
Yeah.
Dude, I'm a philosophy minor. I've read thousands of books. You know, I have a degree. And he's like, well, that's 40 years ago. Yeah, because I'm 50. I'm Doogie Howser. You know, I finished college at 10 years old, you dopey fuck.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So it's like when people, they attack you. Instead of staying on pay, you know, with whatever the target, whatever the subject is, they attack you. And they're like, what, you know, what? Exactly. And if
you're, but you're a Republican.
Huh?
No.
Listen, Michael J. Fox.
He was a Republican.
He was, right?
But the writers were very liberal. I think they didn't mean for it to – it came up against them. I didn't think they wanted – I thought everyone would love to hate him, kind of like Archie Bunker.
Right, right.
But instead, he was so darn lovable that everybody loved to love him.
And considering this time when it was during the Reagan era and stuff like that,
captured a little moment in time.
Yeah, exactly. So –
could you relate as a young Republican? Could you relate to the character?
Well, I don't know if I was a Republican back then. Okay. I don't know if I was that political.
Right.
But, you know, I've always believed, I've been of that belief where I'm not going to rely on others. I can only do it. That's how I was growing up. I couldn't rely on my parents. I couldn't rely on, I had to rely on myself. I couldn't rely on my brother's help. You know what I mean? So I had a, that's just something I was up to. I don't know if that caused me to be more like that, you know? I don't want, you know, all this aspect and help. I'm going to try to do it myself. And then if I fall after trying and busting my ass, then it'd be nice to get some help. But I'm not going to ask for help when I haven't even tried. You know what I'm saying? And I see a lot of people, like in comedy, you know, how many times have you seen comedies, like, you know, especially as a person who books a room, they're like, oh, can you give me a shot in your room? Like, no, I'm not going to give you a shot. Go out there and work. This isn't a beginner room. This is where a place where people work. You want a beginning room, go to Bonkers or, you know, go to some of these other places. You know what I'm saying? No disrespect for them. But listen, Bonkers is a comedy club. I got started. They were one of the first people that featured me. Jackie Knight. Groucho's. And Bonkers. Those are the places that I got to do 20, 25 minutes. And
we
put an
Groucho's.
Act together.
We love Groucho's.
You know? Well, you do. That guy is not on my list. He's those two, you know. I could see certain people dying in a fiery car crash.
All right, now come on now, come on now, come on now, please. This is what I mean. That's the kind of, that's not good. You can't do that. You can't say that.
Well, you can't
feel that. You shouldn't feel that.
Well, if the guy
canceled my contract last week or whatever,
right.
I don't wish any harm to him. I'm pissed that he's not paying me, but right. No, I do not.
Well,
if
you knew half the things, you know that
okay, happened. All right.
There's some build up there. It wasn't like I just got mad over one or two things. You know what I'm saying? Anyway,
I want us to have a mission of love and peace and laughter and
kumbaya, just, motherfucker.
Let's join hands. Come on,
everybody. Let's
liberals
say,
and Republicans together.
Come on. Everybody. Let's say a word.
Kumbaya, my love.
May family ties come back.
Kumbaya.
And Skippy's back on there.
The reboot.
Yeah, the reboot.
Let them not leave me out. Let them not boot me out of the reboot.
That's right, guys. Don't forget tonight, Wise Guys Comedy Show at Tavolino's. Just $10 to get in. Fantastic Italian menu, full open bar, and a great comedy show. I'll be your host. We have a special guest coming in from Canada. A good friend of mine is actually auditioning to be a feature here. Going to do a few minutes. Very funny guy, Franco de Tadeo. Very funny gentleman. We'll be doing our feature comedian.
Yep.
And our headliner, the Boston Globe, says wickedly funny, right?
I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah.
Somebody paid them off.
Were they high at the time? No, I mean, now here's the thing. I never got to see you at the old New York Comedy Club, but you used to go there on a regular basis.
I don't know about a regular basis.
Once in a
honestly,
while.
I never lived in New York. I went.
No, this
is
in Boca, the one in Boca.
Oh, in Boca, yeah. I used to go there.
And I used to say, wow, you know, and then I'd heard like, oh, he's doing comedy, and like, well, that's great, you know what I mean?
Didn't they have a New York Comedy Club originally in New York? Didn't they?
Well, yeah, it's still there, by the way.
It's still there, really.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, Al Martin doesn't own it anymore. He sold it some years ago, and it's actually it's a fantastic club, by the way. It's nice if you ever get there, go New York Comedy Club. Al still owns Broadway Comedy Club, but they had the old New York Comedy Club in Boca. We used to joke around. I'm like, yeah, this week I'm performing at the New York Comedy Club in Boca, and next week I'll be in Austin, Texas, performing at the Boston Comedy Club.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'll be in Rhode Island performing at the L.A. Comedy Club.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that kind of stupid shit. But, you know, but it was just weird. Now,
I worked the first comedy clubs in Florida when they first opened.
Yeah?
The very first ones, yeah. Anyway.
Someone had said, I don't know if this is true, but somebody said when you started doing comedy, you had writers. You had people that you hired to write and help and get a boost, or you did it all on your own?
Oh, no. I worked with writers, but all the best comedians have worked with writers. I worked with the guys that worked with Gary Shandling and Howie Mandel and Jerry Seinfeld and all kinds of great guys, yeah.
I mean, sometimes I've had writers' meetings with a couple of buddies of mine, me and my buddy Perry Sack, Lenny Travis, who's over in Virginia.
Lenny Travis, awesome.
Yeah, funny dude, and good, one of my best friends. He's over for Richard Jenny.
Yeah.
And very funny guy. So we used to always get together and write jokes and stuff. But for the most part, I do. And I won't mention the comic's name, but I met him. And he doesn't write any jokes. He's got like four or five writers.
There are a few people like that, too.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, hey, God bless you. Then you're a performer. You know, to be a comic, you have to write.
There are brilliant comics that kind of work that way. I happen to know that. But I will say that, like you, I like to jam with somebody. I don't want to just get a plate of jokes sent to me. That feels somehow.
Yeah, you've got to get a feel for it.
Pretend I'm writing some of them myself.
Related to your own stuff, right? Yeah. I mean, that's kind of stuff.
Yeah. You can say you're co-written. They're co-written.
Yeah, they're co-written.
Yeah.
It's a jam.
Exactly.
It's a comedy jam.
That's right. You know, I play the guitar. He played the bass. And, well, you know, I'll let you guys go. Well, it'll be a little short, abbreviated version of the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. But
we woke up a little late, so.
Yeah, it's the Wake Up Later with Dougie show. Again, don't forget tonight, Wise Guys Comedy Show at Tavolino's, 8:15 showtime. Call 954-509-0046 to RSVP.
Call now.
Yeah, they're open. And
or like at the end of those pay television commercials, the As Seen on TV ones, they always go, call now.
Yeah.
You ever notice that they go up in the end? What does that work?
Now.
Does that psychologically work somehow? They prove that?
There's got to be some science behind it. You know, listen, I'm not going to reinvent the wheel when it comes to,
they found out that the call now, people didn't respond to. It was like, they're telling me to
it's
do something.
Yeah, don't tell me what to do.
Right. Exactly.
The call now.
It's a hypnotic thing.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to listen to that guy. He was so pleasant when he asked.
He went up at the end. I'm going to pick up the phone. Call now.
By the way, what else is coming up this week? Any other shows coming up this week?
Friday, February 2nd, Sunrise Civic Center.
There you go. Very fun.
Civic Center Theater.
And then next week, the Tempe Improv.
Nice.
Yes.
Very cool show, venue. This week, you can catch me at Funky Buddha on Friday for the Leon Arp Roast. Leon Arp spells it AARP. He's an older comic in the area. Very funny guy. Right, matter of fact, when we get done, I'm going to be writing a bunch more stuff for him. And then Saturday, I'm going to be at the VFW at NAMM Nights in West Palm Beach, along with my good buddies Nadim Awad and Ethan Moore. For more dates, go to DougieAlmeida.com. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Dougie Dangerous. Follow the show at Wake Up Dougie and join our fan page on Facebook at Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. Viet, how can they find you?
ComedianViet.com.
That's V-I-E-T.
Yep.
Right, make sure you spell that. And, of course, Mark Price.
You know, you really have a great voice for radio and this kind of thing.
Thanks. Well, you know, I'm trying. I got pipes. You know, listen, I got something to fall back on, right? That big radio career. We all know how great that radio industry is. You know, what's next? I'm going to be a VCR repairman.
Yeah.
That's actually, I think I could represent you into a talk radio gig.
Really?
Why not? You're a Republican comedian.
Well, yeah, and a background in finance.
I'm serious.
28, 9 years.
Let's,
somebody in
let's
Orlando,
on
one of the guys from the master, I think it was, he opens for James John a lot, the big guy. Cologne?
Oh, Miguel.
Miguel Cologne, yeah. Very funny guy.
I went to high school with
him.
Did you? He's actually in my grade.
Oh, is
yeah,
he?
We graduated in the same high school.
That's
together.
Funny.
What are the odds of that?
Yeah.
Statistically improbable that he would bring that up.
Yeah, in Goose Creek, South Carolina.
Yeah, he looks a lot older than you, by the way. just say, only kidding, Miguel. But he actually said we have a guy, we were looking for somebody who has, has humor and actually knows the world of finance.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, and, but absolutely.
Well, you should follow that.
Well, listen, if you can help.
I'll help.
You can be an agent. I'll give you a percentage.
I'm in.
There we go.
To my butt.
There you go, guys. We won't be here next week because I'm going to be working a real radio gig, thanks to Mark Price. Don't forget tonight's show, guys, and thanks for watching all week. The Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. We'll be back next week on all new shows. God bless. Take care, and hey, we'll be here next week at the same spot.
Love you, guys.
People on Earth, can you hear me? Came a voice from the sky on a magical night. And yellow colors of a thousand sunsets. They travel to the world on a silvery night. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one. Setting fire to the sky as they landed, carrying to the world children of the sun. Children of the sun. All at once came a sound from inside. Thick beam of light hit the ground. Everyone felt the sound of their heartbeat. Every man, every woman, every child. They passed the limits of imagination through the door to the world. And on the journey of a thousand lifetimes, with the children of the sun, they started to climb.